Earth Day there, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. I mean, this is just so cool, isn't it? Modern technology is so cool. Hillary Clinton has won Pennsylvania primary with, 6% of the votes counted. It's all over! The Pennsylvania primary. It's truly amazing. That's what NBC and CNN, MSNBC and CNN are projecting now, that Hillary Clinton is the winner in Pennsylvania. I don't know. I the reason I laugh is so I don't scream and cry and rend my garments and cover myself in ashes out of the fireplace. But you know, with all the money spent, all the crazy advertising. All the stuff that goes on here, what's it been, 6 weeks, and within 45 minutes of the polls closing, bing, we have a winner. You know, it's like, holy Christ, what is the point? But anyway, this now moves on to Indiana and North Carolina. The never-ending 2008 presidential, Democratic presidential primary season limps on to the next battleground. The ads from the Clinton campaign are getting more and more and more negative, more and more and more scary. We'll get into that a little bit tonight. So anyway, happy Earth Day. It's a big news day. Pennsylvania primary results. Bush and the three amigos. Well, Bush and the other two. Bush, Calderon, and Harper. Talk up NAFTA. Talk down recession. Down in New Orleans. And Bush acts like he's a tourist down there. He was out, hey, this is really a nice place. It's just unbelievable. This dumb son of a bitch is in New Orleans that is still reeling because his government did nothing. Oh, never mind. Don't get into it, Malloy. But he makes a whole bunch of statements, most of which are totally disconnected to reality, somewhere in some parallel universe. We have the audio from there. And then he gets all jiggy with the New Orleans jazz band. Did you see the audio or the video of that? Bush has one dance move. He sucks in his mouth, sucks in his lips, those little thin white man lips. He sucks them in, and then he holds his hand like he's a dog going for a bone and kind of flops his arms back. Back and forth, and moves his ass the way you would expect someone who just missed being hit by a cab in Midtown Manhattan moves their ass. And that's his dancing. It's just, I've never seen anything like it. And he gets that goofy look on his face. He reminds me of Elaine in Seinfeld. I mean, it's just that herky-jerky. But he does the same dance, whether he's in New Orleans or Ghana or some Russian Federation state or with the natives in London. It's the same dance. Well, we also have a moment with Bob tonight. So stay tuned for the program. Stick around, damn it, for the whole thing. I know a lot of you people stick around for the first hour, and then you go, oh, okay, well, we got important things to do. You know, stick around, okay? Today is Earth Day, which is kind of a joke. It really is. It's 38 years old, this holiday. I was living in Georgia back in 1970. When Earth Day had its first, or when it had its inaugural debut, and we had a politician down here, way back. His name was Jimmy Bentley, and he was, at the time, he was the Comptroller General of the state of Georgia, and a Democrat. It was all run by Yellow Dog Democrats here in, back in Georgia back in the day. But they're all psychopaths. The Georgia Democrats are like Georgia Republicans are now. They're just crazy bastards. Just all of them. Just absolutely, you know, too much moonshine, too many peanuts. They just, you know, they couldn't understand why lynching was no longer legal, or you know, any talk about removing the stars and bars, the Confederate battle flag from the state flag of Georgia was considered akin to saying that Jesus was a Jew, or worse. It was just a real rat's nest down here. Of course, it's all cleaned out now. But it's all Republicans in charge now. You ought to come down here sometime. Oh, my God. But anyway, I digress. One of Georgia's leading politicians back then, Jimmy Bentley, tried to warn President Richard Nixon that and other state governors and other national leaders that Earth Day was a communist plot in disguise. Now, what was his proof? Well, April 22nd is also the birthday of Vladimir Lenin. So you see the connection? Lenin's birthday, Earth Day, son of a bitch, there you go, there you go. Watch out, President Nixon. This is a commie plot. Now, the next year, 71, on the first anniversary of this holiday, or whatever you want to call it, Bentley told the Atlanta Journal, quote, "My only concern last year was that a bunch of kooks, hippies, and nuts would pull Earth Day out of focus," end quote. Aha. Well, you don't hear that anymore. You don't hear that. You know why? Because the kooks and nuts have absorbed Earth Day. Corporate America, the establishment, it's theirs. It belongs to them now. Marketing has replaced marching. Compromise has replaced demands. Corporations now underwrite little Earth Day festivals. Molly came home from preschool today, and what did she say? Kathy, she had been healing the earth? Is that what she said? And, okay, that's cool. Or helping the earth. And that's because the teachers took all the little three-and-a-half and four-year-olds outside and had them pick up paper, trash, which is cool. And I wouldn't think over in that neighborhood there would be trash. Maybe the teachers went out and salted the trash, put trash out of the ground so the kids could pick it up. But it was sponsored by somebody. I don't know who sponsored it. But corporate America now owns Earth Day. That's all it is. That's all it is just a corporate. It's to let you know that corporate America is busting its ass to honor Earth Day, to pick up garbage, and, you know, stop global climate change, right? They have these little eco fairs to teach people how to change their carbon footprint. In the meantime, in the meantime, what? Really, there's no point. This audience is too hip for me to go into all the stuff. You know what I'm saying. Now, Dennis Hayes, who was the national coordinator of that first Earth Day back in 1970, says, and this shows you how far into the Twilight Zone Dennis Hayes has been pushed. He says there's nothing wrong with that. He says it's okay. Yeah. He said in a telephone interview, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, he called the early days of Earth Day, feisty. That was his word. And he said it was a time when corporations were, quote, mostly trying to hide what they were doing, end quote. Dennis, knock, knock. Hello, Dennis, what are they doing now? It was a time when corporations were mostly, Dennis, hello. Too much reefer, Dennis. Way too much reefer. Hayes is now the president and CEO of a foundation in Seattle. Hello, Seattle. That funds environmental nonprofit groups in the Pacific Northwest. And he said in this phone interview, we were taking on the entire establishment. So things had to be feisty. Oh, God. Anyway, the 1970s saw the passage of all those federal laws during the Nixon era. To protect the environment, you know, the Clean Water Act. Try to hold your laughter. The Clean Air Act and The right wing's favorite, the Endangered Species Act. Excuse me. Well, it's been 38 years. And, yeah, the highways and byways certainly are a little more devoid of trash than they were back in 1970, right, Dennis? But corporations back then were trying to hide things? And you better clean your water now.
What happens in those forests, because of lousy federal policy, is they grow to be they're not harvested.
Okay. Well, apparently we had some temporary problems with the internet stream. I believe it is working again. So, once again, if you are just coming, waking up, getting ready to go to work, Hillary Clinton apparently has won by a very small margin at this point. The projections indicate Pennsylvania, in the Pennsylvania primary. And I know Hillary Clinton supporters are not going to see any kind of a win as anything less than a win, and that's fine, you know, that's fine. Go for it. Speaking of Hillary Clinton, she said on Good Morning America this morning that she will obliterate Iran if it attacks Israel. Well, okay. She told ABC News, and apparently they had it on Good Morning America this morning. She said, quote, "I want the Iranians to know that if I'm the president, we will attack Iran." And that was her answer when she asked what she would do as president were Iran to launch a nuclear attack on Israel. She went on to say, in the next 10 years, during which they might foolishly consider launching an attack on Israel, we would be able to totally obliterate them. End quote. In addition, Obama's campaign yesterday accused Clinton of trying to scare voters. She had a campaign ad featuring images of Al-Qaeda mastermind Osama bin Laden. You know, Hillary is Republican. You do understand that, don't you? Maybe Republican light, but there is not a dime's worth of difference between her policies and Bush's policies. And I defy anyone out there who is a Hillary Clinton supporter to show me a difference. You know, I've been saying that for 6-7 months now, and I haven't gotten that email yet that says, well, Mike, here, an email that's sourced that shows a clear and distinct difference between a policy of George W. Bush and a policy of Hillary Clinton based on George Bush's pronouncements and Hillary Clinton's votes. I have yet to see it. Now, I say that just as a way of identifying for my own damn self, Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is to me, as was her husband, as will she always be, Republican light. There's no question there. There's none whatsoever. And I think most people who support Hillary Clinton in your heart of hearts, you know that, and choose to support her anyway, which is fine, which is absolutely fine. Back in 2004, during that hideous presidential campaign, Bill Clinton described what he said is one of Clinton's laws of politics. Here's what he said, quote, "If one candidate's trying to scare you and the other one's trying to get you to think, if one candidate's appealing to your fears and the other one's appealing to your hopes, you'd better vote for the person who wants you to think and hope." End quote. Now, yo, Slick Willie, which Democratic candidate would that be this year? Which one is talking fear and hope? And which one is talking scare you and thinking? Come on, Willie, come on. God damn it, come on. You've been out there whining, big dog, like somebody has stepped on your tail. You've been whining like they slammed the screen door right on your tail. You've been poking your finger in these reporters' chests and saying things like, mobs in Harlem. Can't nobody accuse me of racism. I mean, come on now. You know, just because I said Jesse Jackson won in South Carolina, too, I didn't mean that South Carolina Democratic primary was a Negro primary. You know, whoever would have thought that? I got an office in Harlem. But you said it, champ. You said it, big dog. If one candidate's trying to scare you and the other one's trying to get you to think, if one candidate's appealing to your fears, the other one's appealing to your hopes, you better vote for the person who wants you to think and hope. Oops. Yeah, that's the problem with the spoken word. When it's recorded here in the age of electronic wizardry, it comes back to bite you on your ass. Eh, big dog? Of course, we don't talk about that stuff anymore, do we? No, we don't talk about that anymore. No, sir! Anyway, in Hillary Clinton's last campaign ad in Pennsylvania, she used pictures of Pearl Harbor, Bin Laden, Katrina, and it all kind of came together to mirror that 3 a.m. phone call spot that the pundits out there say helped her win Texas and Ohio last month with its fear mongering. The fact is, both these Democrats have vowed to defend Israel against any Iranian attack, which to me is just, how about Paraguay? Do we have an agreement to defend them if they're attacked by Brazil with nuclear weapons? No. What about the UK? Have we said that if France attacks the UK, we will obliterate them? We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. I'd run my life down. You can't tell me how to keep my business sound. You can't tell me what I'm doing wrong when you keep driving and singing that same old funny song. You can't tell me.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Again, Hillary Clinton projected to have won the Pennsylvania primary. And Hillary Clinton also projected to be the Democratic Party candidate that has really decided that it's time to kick ass and take names insofar as her ad campaigns are concerned. But her threat to obliterate Iran if it launches a nuclear attack against Israel is either nothing less than pandering to the Jewish vote in Pennsylvania or around the country. It has to be that, because There has not been a presidential candidate or a candidate, I would imagine, for any federal office since the early 50s who have not said basically the same thing. Maybe not with such belligerent open language, but it's been understood that U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East is determined by the circumstances and events that Israel has to deal with, or chooses to deal with, or sets up so that they must deal with it. That's what U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East consists of, especially now. For 50 or 60 years, it was because Israel was the only U.S. ally in the Middle East. The so-called non-aligned or Arab states who were aligned with the Soviet Union. The great game played out in that manner. We have the West, so-called, the United States and Great Britain, the UK, have a miserable history in the Middle East that warrants the contempt that is felt by so many people there. They have a memory. We don't have memory here. We have no memory whatsoever. A 100-year memory is nothing to people in the Middle East, to Arabs in the Middle East. It is nothing. It is what happened yesterday. We don't have an historical memory at all of our involvement. Not only do we not have a memory, we don't have the knowledge of what we have done in the Middle East. So Hillary's statement that Iran will be obliterated on her watch if she is president raises so many questions, doesn't it? Is this a presidential candidate who is stating categorically that the decision to launch nuclear weapons, as it is with George Bush, so will it be with Hillary Clinton? There will be no consultation. There will be no declaration of war. There will be no forethought. There will be a goddamn nuclear attack. That's all. If Israel is attacked by Iran, what happens, Senator Clinton, if, Turkey is attacked with nuclear weapons by Iran? Turkey is a member of NATO, as we are. Israel is not. What happens then, Madam Senator or President? I get so tired of this. I get tired of the pandering. I get tired of it. If the United States could ever develop an even-handed policy toward the Middle East, our problems would end. But we have not, and we will not. And you know it, and I know it, until that part of the world pitches over into a nuclear confrontation and a resulting World War III. You know that, and so do I. So to hear Hillary Clinton say that, to hear any politician say it, whether it's George Bush or Hillary Clinton, does two things for me. It establishes beyond a doubt her bona fides as a Republican. And it also drives home, once again, the failure, abject failure, of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. It's just never going to stop. Never. Never going to stop. Oh, P.S. The National Iranian American Council has denounced Clinton's escalating war rhetoric on Iran, as they put it. In an interview with Good Morning America, Clinton said what I just said. She said, the National Iranian American Council issued a statement that says it regrets that at a time when America needs a new foreign policy, one centered on resolving regional and global conflict through diplomacy and cooperation with U.S. allies, Senator Clinton has chosen a policy that would prolong conflict. The statement goes on to say her rhetoric suggests that she would resort to Cold War tactics instead of recognizing the ability to resolve the U.S.-Iran stalemate through diplomacy. The president of the National Iranian American Council said further, quote, Senator Clinton's statement reflects a mindset of perpetual conflict that has guided our Iran policy. You see, this person's an American. For the last 7 years, this is disastrous for U.S. national interests since we are in desperate need of a new and fresh Iran policy aimed at resolving the conflict rather than prolonging it. The president of the National Iranian American Council concluded by saying, fixation on deterrence, sanctions, and threats of war have all failed to advance U.S. national interests and have failed to change Iran's nuclear policy. What we need now is not nuclear deterrence, but nuclear diplomacy, end quote. It's the pandering. That's the part that I hate, the absolute pandering. You know, for Hillary Clinton I'm picking on her because she's the one who made the statement. If Barack Obama had made the statement, if John McCain makes the statement, then I will bring that up too. But she's the one that said it this morning. obliterate Iran. She would obliterate Iran. Well, she has won the Pennsylvania primary, so apparently that sort of rhetoric rests well with the voters of Pennsylvania, or else they are just not aware of it, or they don't care, or it's just the same old, same old. Every American politician says something equivalent to an attack on Israel is an attack on the United States. And yet, when the attacks do come, what happened last year when the violence between Israel and factions in Lebanon began, the American Secretary of State, the shoe lady, Condoleezza Rice, waited how long before condemning the action and calling for a ceasefire? Well, was it 2 weeks? Let the Israelis see if they can gain an advantage, which they did not. And once it was clear that that advantage was not what was going to be denied, that Israel had finally got itself into a situation that, short of using its own nuclear weapons or a real invasion of southern Lebanon, they were screwed. Then the shoe lady and other American diplomats started to open their pie holes to make statements about stopping the violence. That was a grand moment in U.S. Diplomacy, a wondrous moment, a moment that just stands out and will stand out for freaking ever. Who's dying? Oh, some Israeli civilians and some Lebanese civilians and, you know. Well, who's winning? Well, not anybody yet. Oh, okay. Well, let's all be quiet and see what happens. Evil bastards, all of them. And then last Wednesday, the Israeli newspaper Ma'ariv reported that Likud leader Benjamin Netanyahu told an audience at Bar Ilan University last week that the September 11, 2001 terror attacks on the United States had been, quote, beneficial for Israel, end quote. And this is reported by Haaretz newspaper in Israel. Ma'ariv quoted the former prime minister as saying, quote, we are benefiting from one thing, and that is the attack on the Twin Towers and Pentagon and the American struggle in Iraq. End quote. He reportedly added that these events, quote, swung American public opinion in our favor, end quote. The September 11 terror attacks have been beneficial for Israel. I find some of that just so difficult to process. You know what I'm saying? But that's the way it is in the United States. That's the way it is. All right, we'll be back right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
You're gonna read just what you saw. You're gonna read just what you saw.
It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Interesting email here from Jay. I don't want to say his last name. And he writes, Mike, as a second-generation atheist, I've thoroughly enjoyed your discussions of both the Pope and Catholic influence in America today and in history. To me, all is fair game. But you noted last night you have gotten a lot of letters that say, but what about the Jews? Is Catholic influence and Jewish influence over the last 50 years equivalent? Or, as you seemed to imply last night, are Catholics taking America straight to hell? So why not run a test? Count all the letters, emails, etc. you have gotten over your Catholic comments. Then go on a similar tirade, facts only, of course, no blood libel, go on a similar tirade against the Jews, and then count the letters and emails, etc. that you get. Or don't. I would miss your show. Keep up the great work, Jay, and his last name is Jewish. Like my last name is Catholic. Oh, God. Jay makes a very good point. And I guess because, you know, the Catholics never went through a Holocaust. The Catholics were perpetrators of various Holocausts, small h, throughout history and around the world, whereas the Jews were victims of the Holocaust, capital H. That factors in, but the question is legit. Sure, absolutely, Jay. You betcha. But I have nothing to say negative about Jews. I never have. Not that I'm aware of. My complaints are about Zionism and or the policies of the State of Israel. And to me, there is a difference. There is a massive difference. My godson, who is in film school, and I won't say the university or the city, obviously, is a young Jewish man. Molly's godfather is Jewish. And it just goes on and on and on like that in my extended family. And these are observant Jews. I'm not talking about Jews who go, my family's Jewish, but I'm not. No. My problem has been with the policies of the United States government in its accepting whatever the government of Israel has done to the Palestinians. That is my complaint. And the subsequent aligning of U.S. foreign policy with the domestic policies of the State of Israel, no matter what. No matter what atrocity is committed by various governments in Israel against the Palestinians, we go along with it. We either veto resolutions condemning the action, or we don't allow the resolutions even to come up for a vote. Certainly not in this country. And God forbid an American legislator should make a critical statement on the floor of the House or the Senate, or worse, God forbid, in public regarding Israel's foreign policy or domestic policy. That politician's political career now has a huge bullseye on it. So as far as it's not a question, Jay, of the policies of Catholics and Jews. It is a policy in my mind it is a question of the policies of the church, the Catholic Church, in their acquiescence, their support of the Holocaust, capital H, their commission of various Holocausts, small h, that activity and the activity of the Israeli government against the Palestinians. And in so many instances, an activity that the most bloodiest of irony surrounds the activity, because what is being perpetrated against the Palestinians are in a lesser degree, certainly the Jews have not opened in Israel death camps for the Palestinians. So no, there is no comparison there. But separate roads, separate facilities, an apartheid state that's being forced on the Palestinians by the Israelis, who happen to be Jews, is so similar to what was forced on the Jews by the good Christians over the past 2,000 years. And that's the part that is so hurtful, that is so appalling to me. I am so deeply connected to and love my friends who are Jewish, to the extent that I godfather their children and they godfather mine. I'm not talking about Judaism. And when you get right down to it, I don't condemn the teachings of Christ or the statements of Muhammad or what Gandhi has said or the statements of the Buddha or Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You understand what I'm saying. So, Jay, I'll pass on the challenge because it's not to me a legitimate challenge. For me, for somebody else it would be, but not for me. Not for me. We will obliterate Iran. Obliterate. That's almost as bad as the statements made by some of the war hawks in this country back in the 60s about glassing Vietnam. Glassing it. Never stops, does it? All right, we have a break coming up here. We'll come back and lighten up a little bit. I hope. We have some sound bites from Chuckle Nuts that you are going to find weirdly entertaining. We also have a moment with Bob this evening. And a statement by a Colorado legislator that just it shows once again that in so many instances the people we put in elected office are just absolute dumbasses. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Seven past the hour in a couple of minutes. Hillary Clinton is going to give her victory speech. We're going to carry it for you here on the program. Her victory tonight in Pennsylvania by approximately 6 percentage points is, I think, a clear indication that fear and loathing in our political system, I don't care who uses it, if a Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, doesn't matter, fear and loathing is what motivates us. We are not a people and maybe we're not unique in this, but we're not a people that can be motivated by good stuff, by hope. What was the big dog's quote from 2004? Bill Clinton described one of what he called Clinton's laws of politics. And it is this: if one candidate's trying to scare you and the other one's trying to get you to think, and if one candidate's appealing to your fears and the other one's appealing to your hopes, you better vote for that person who wants you to think and hope. while his wife runs a political ad today in Pennsylvania that incorporated 9/11, Pearl Harbor, Jesus, Katrina, what else, Kathy? I mean, it just went on and on. And the unsettled message is a vote for anyone other than me is a vote to continue mass murder, chaos, death, destruction, darkness, thundering herds of locusts, storms, hurricanes, tornadoes. Vote for me, and I will save you, whether it's at 3 a.m. or 6 a.m. or noon. I hate this. I just hate this. And for good measure, she adds today that any attack on Israel guarantees instant nuclear retaliation to the extent that Iran would be obliterated. Whew. Here we are. Well, it's a winning formula, Senator Clinton. Damn right. I'm sure Terry McAuliffe and Karl Rove sat you down along with the guy who ran the... Richard Mellon Scaife, and had a long talk with you back in the day where you just wanted to be an average kind of low-key Republican, and turned you into a Karl Rove Republican, right? Well, have at it. Wave the flag. Insist on the lapel pin. Stack the questions the next time you have a debate. And just hold on to your ass, and you will win as long as you use fear and loathing and all the negative things that seem to work so well. How many political experts have told us over and over again that negative advertising works? Now, if they are correct, and the proof, as my grandmother used to say, is in the pudding, if they are correct and negative advertising wins these political races, then anyone who runs on a platform of change and hope and keep your chin up and we're going to do it, the time is right, here we are, it's our moment, had better just sit down and forget about it. Now, I know a lot of you saying, well, that's what Ronald Reagan ran on. No, he didn't. No, he didn't at all. That was part of his message, but the subtext of Ronald Reagan's message was, if you don't vote for me, the nuclear bombs will be raining down on us before I have a chance to get up the nuclear umbrella that's going to protect us all. And yes, I know who started it, Lyndon Johnson. You don't have to remind me. The infamous, it only ran one time, and apparently millions of Americans saw that ad, even though it only ran once. I saw it! I was living in Savannah, Georgia, and I saw it. It ran once. The cute little girl picking petals off a daisy as a voice counts down from 10. And the little girl sings a song, and the camera zooms in to her iris, where there's a little tiny light in her eye that all of a sudden, as the camera zooms in, becomes a nuclear mushroom cloud. And the ad made it very clear, a vote for Barry Goldwater was a vote for nuclear death. And as a result, Lyndon Johnson won in a landslide. And how much longer before he resigned, essentially resigned, by saying, I'm not going to run again. So, sure, fear works. Fear and loathing. Hunter Thompson's seminal book, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972. If you haven't read it, you need to get a copy and read it. Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972. All about the Nixon campaign. If I remember, it begins or the foreword begins with Hunter Thompson in a rented house in Georgetown peeing off the front porch because of all the drugs and alcohol he had done the night before. Great opening to the book. But I digress. A Colorado legislature known for kicking a photographer who took a picture of him when he was praying was ordered to leave the podium of the Colorado House of Representatives yesterday because he called Mexican workers, quote, illiterate peasants, end quote. Republican State Representative Douglas Bruce made the comment during debate on a bill that would allow the state to help immigrant workers get temporary federal visas. The measure is intended to ease a shortage of farm workers in Colorado. There are crops rotting on the ground, as predicted. Mr. Bruce said, quote, I would like to have the opportunity to state at the microphone why I don't think we need 5,000 more illiterate peasants in Colorado, end quote. His outburst drew an audible gasp from the House. State Representative Kathleen Curry, a Democrat who was serving as chairwoman during the debate, said, how dare you, and ordered him away from the podium, that he was no longer recognized to speak. And this scumbag later defended his remarks. Here's what he said, quote, I looked up illiterate in the dictionary. It means somebody who is lacking in formal education or is unable to read and write. I don't think that these people who are planning to come over here and pick potatoes or peaches are likely to have much of a formal education. And I looked up the word peasant. The word peasant means a person who works in agricultural fields. These people, most of them don't speak English. Most of them don't have any formal education. And that's why they're coming over here. I don't blame them for trying, but I don't think we should pave the way for more aliens to come here. End quote. Yeah, that would be an American politician. Absolutely. This thug became the first Colorado lawmaker in history to be censured by his own House of Representatives after he kicked a newspaper photographer for taking his picture during a prayer. And Republicans, his own party, later removed him from the powerful State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee because he refused to co-sponsor a resolution honoring military veterans. That's a Republican for you. That is a Republican for you. That is, this is a simply a dog bites man story. That's a Republican. Are we getting close to a Clinton speech?
Oh, look, she's wearing a pantsuit with a brightly colored blazer over dark pants.
Oh, don't be so
surprised.
Don't be so sexist.
Where's her scarf?
Don't be so sexist. All right, let's bring this up. And listen to Hillary Clinton.
It's Earth Day. I thought she
victory.
Might have one with little trees on it.
Hillary Clinton's victory speech.
Casey symbolically was very, very important for Obama.
All right, guys. She's starting right now. Let's listen in, everybody. Pennsylvania Avenue, and it runs right through.
There's the big dog right behind her.
You know, for 6 weeks, Senator Obama and I have crisscrossed this state, meeting people up close, being judged side by side, making our best case. You listened, and today you chose. With two wars abroad and an economic crisis here at home, you know the stakes are high and the challenges are great. But you also know the possibilities. Those possibilities are endless. If we roll up our sleeves and get to work with a president who is ready to lead on day one.
Yeah!
Ready to take charge as Commander-in-Chief and make this economy work for middle-class families. And I thank you. I thank you, Pennsylvania, for deciding I can be that president.
Yeah! Hillary! Hillary! Day one! Day one!
day one, day one. Hey, hey, day one. Yeah. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. We'll be right back.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
I need this hopeless feeling like I need a hole in my head.
It's about 23 past the hour. Remember what I said, even though I have friends who say I'm committing, you know, some sort of spiritual and political suicide, I will vote for the Democratic candidate nominee. Let's go back to Hillary Clinton and her victory speech in Pennsylvania.
We were up against a formidable opponent who outspent us 3-1. He broke every spending record in this state, trying to knock us out of the race. Well, the people of Pennsylvania had other ideas.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough. Take it out. Take it out. Take it out. Oh, my God. The problem here, of course, not a problem, but the political reality is, to hell with it. There's no point. She's not John McCain. She's close, but she's not John McCain. I'm just going to leave it alone. Let's go to what happened today with Bush. The Three Amigos were in New Orleans today for a meeting of what did they call it, Kathy? This meeting did it have a name? It was about trade talks about NAFTA, but I don't know. You know, usually these events have some sort of a focus group tested name. Anyway, he said today that now is not the time to renegotiate or walk away from the North American Free Trade Agreement. And he also denied that the U.S. was in a recession. we have that bit for you. He was at this joint press conference, news conference, after opening statements with Mexican President Felipe Calderon, who stole his election, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who got elected in Canada thanks to the focus on the family in the Great White North, and then, of course, Bush, who has no more business being president than some street thug. But they all got together to talk about NAFTA and how wonderful it is. You're not going to believe what we've got for you here in terms of sound. And he used the occasion, Bush did, to call on Congress to pass a free trade pact with Colombia. Uh-huh. He said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's refusal to schedule a vote could effectively kill it this year. Well, one can hope, chuckle nuts. Bush said sternly, "It makes no sense to me to say that Colombian goods can come into our country duty-free." He didn't even pause a beat, realizing what he said with that. "Yet our goods can't go into Colombia duty-free." that's not quite true, George. The Colombian goods most sought by the American consumer is cocaine, and the American goods most sought by Colombia are weapons. And as far as I know, neither are have to pay duties. They're both duty free. They're both or should be illegal as hell. And they both are about murder and death and destruction, not to mention runny noses. So, what Colombian goods? I don't know. What, Kathy, do you know what Colombian goods come to this country? I guess coffee, Colombian coffee. But
cocaine?
I just said that. I mean, other than...
Oh, were you talking?
I was. He says an agreement with Colombia would level the playing field. And he said the U.S. is not in a recession. We're in a slowdown. He says, I'm obviously concerned for our consumers. He is concerned for our consumers. We'll have some sound for you when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Well, almost. It's about 25 before the hour. Roz in California gave us, I'm sorry, in Canada, gave us the title to this meeting of the Three Amigos in New Orleans. It is called the Security and Prosperity Summit. Security. So here we are, Bush, Calderon, and Harper meeting and talking and eating beignets at, what's that place we used to go to?
Cafe du Monde, but you've got me confused with some other woman because you and I have never been there.
Oh, that's right. It was Red. I'm sorry. It was one of your predecessors that we used to eat beignets with. Well, you know.
I've been there, too, with someone else, so that's okay.
I know you have. Anyway, here they all are in New Orleans on Earth Day, and Bush celebrated Earth Day by... Does this mean I have to sleep on the couch tonight?
We'll see.
Bush celebrated by talking about how he's destroying the American worker and the U.S. economy. Now, he didn't exactly put it in those terms, but you'll get the drift here in just a moment. Just one comment from Chucklenuts from the Happy Talk opening statements, and then we'll move on to the Q&A portion of the Three Amigos Love Fest. Now, this is from Raisin Brain's opening remarks. The audio is a bit rough on this cut, but it gets better as we go on. So here he is, Chucklenuts.
One of the things are... You know, people ask, well, does it make sense for Mexico, Canada, and the United States to meet? Absolutely, it makes sense. We're neighbors.
Oh, shit.
A prosperous neighborhood is in our interests. A secure neighborhood is in our interests. And we share common values. So I'm not surprised we've had good meetings. Plus, we like each other. We talked about, trade. Mexico, Canada, and the United States made a bold decision in the early 1990s. Our countries decided to reduce our trade barriers through the North American Free Trade Agreement. That was a visionary move by previous leaders. A move that has benefited all three of our countries.
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Trade has tripled. Our economies have grown by more than 50%. Now is not the time to renegotiate NAFTA or walk away from NAFTA.
Actually, it's the time to drop a nuke on it. But, I had a writing instructor one time who said you should never use the word some or the two words a lot in your writing in describing anything. I don't know why. It's just some of those rules from your old English composition teachers surface every once in a while.
Yeah, but he wasn't talking about the president. He can say whatever he wants.
That's true. That's very true. Moving on to the really fun Q&A portion of this Dog and Pony Show. The first reporter asked about Dim Sun's NAFTA comments. The reporter says... Mr. President, Democratic presidential candidates, in fact, are talking about renegotiating that trade agreement, if elected. I'm wondering if you're worried about their comments on the campaign trail are perhaps overshadowing your pro-trade agenda. In essence, do you worry, Mr. President, that you're losing the free trade debate in the course of public opinion?
Actually, my biggest concern on trade right now is with Colombia. NAFTA exists.
Yeah.
And NAFTA, when you analyze it in an objective way, it benefits, beneficial to America.
Uh-huh.
Also happens to be beneficial to Mexico and Canada, which makes it a very good comprehensive agreement. It's beneficial to us because when you're able to export to your neighborhood,
yeah,
it helps create jobs.
Oh!
Jobs are created when people find outlets for their goods and services.
Oh, okay.
We have found a lot of outlets for our goods and services in our neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
It also helps consumers when you import.
Okay.
This agreement's been beneficial
in
creating wealth in our neighborhood. Our economies have all grown.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Look at food prices and energy prices. And, of course, the stuff that's really a crappy-ass cheap, George, is not coming from Mexico any longer, is it? It's coming from China and Vietnam. And, you know, that place where your buddy Tom DeLay likes to hang out and molest children, the North Mariana Islands, right? Huh? Mensa Man strikes again. The genius is just overwhelming of this guy. Aren't you proud of your leader? Jobs are created when people find outlets for their goods and services. You know, unless there are these, illegal aliens come over here to pick lettuce. What'd that boy in Colorado call them? Peasants? Of course, I wonder if anybody has explained to George Bush something that I saw on, was it 60 Minutes or was it just a newscast recently, about American produce farmers who have kind of given up the ghost as far as trying to get their field crops harvested and are now leasing huge tracts of land in Mexico, where they go ahead and grow their cabbages and broccoli and lettuce and radishes and asparagus, and they just have Mexican labor there pick it, which is fine for the Mexican workers. So you see how NAFTA works? It makes it impossible for workers in their own country, like Mexico, to make a living with farm products any longer because of subsidized U.S. farm products that come flooding across the border. So the farmers in Mexico give it up and come up here to work as pickers and shuckers and the stoop labor until that becomes politically unviable in this country and they're threatened with death or worse. And then the American farmers say to hell with it and move across the border. So then the Mexican pickers and shuckers can just say, oh, okay, well, we'll just... You see how all this works? As Bush says, just wonderful for your consumers. Continuing to ramble on with his NAFTA answer, Bush starts to talk about borders and his concern for the poor Mexican workers. If you're so worried about them, why not go after the big corporations who smuggle them over here and pay them slave wages?
I wish people could remember what the border looked like between Texas and Mexico before NAFTA.
What did it look like?
I mean, it was poor, really poor.
Oh, okay.
On both sides of the border. If you go down there today,
yeah,
there's prosperity on both sides of the border, and that's in our nation's interests.
There is?
I mean, one way to increase pressure on the border is to, if you do it away with NAFTA, there's going to be a lot of Mexicans, more Mexicans out of work.
And then what?
It'll make it harder on the border.
Oh, okay.
It'll make it harder to deal with. So people who say, let's get rid of NAFTA as a throwaway political line, must understand this has been good for America. And it's also been, good for Mexico and Canada. And that's what you want in your neighborhood.
That's what you want in your neighborhood. You want goodness all around. Goodness and blessings and rosy cheeks. And this guy is so deluded. But if you think he is deluded, I want you to listen to this right-wing proto-fascist from Mexico, Felipe Calderon, the one who stole the election from the populist candidate from the left in Mexico's last national election. Listen to what Calderon thinks about NAFTA. He's going to catapult the propaganda just like his good neighbor, Mr. Bush. Here's his answer via a translator as to the advantages of NAFTA.
Before NAFTA, there were many businesses, Mexican businesses, that were afraid, and they alleged that it was impossible to compete with the sophisticated and modern U.S. companies, and they weren't going to survive. There were also many U.S. companies who thought it was impossible to compete in more open markets. Now, what was the result? The result has been that trade has grown, and that has led to gains for everyone involved. Contrary to what they believe, that one was going to win, the other would lose. It was a win-win situation, and NAFTA has benefited the three countries. Trade has grown in all three. Jobs have grown in all three. And even wage levels have gone up in all three.
Oh, my God.
Today, the economies of Canada, Mexico, and the United States are bigger and stronger than they were 14 years ago. Income per capita for all three has also grown compared to 14 years ago.
Oh, my God.
In the case of the U.S. economy, if you were to take a step backwards with regard to NAFTA or free trade, you would be condemning Americans to have one of the least competitive economies in the developed world.
Excuse me, Madam Translator. Were you not aware that the dollar has fallen now to historic levels against the euro, the Japanese yen, and the British pound? Are you not oh, God. That's right. You're just a translator. I'm sorry. Never mind. NAFTA, Senor Calderon says, NAFTA has benefited all three countries. Trade has grown in all three. Jobs have grown in all three. I mean, this is mind-boggling. And wage levels have gone up in all three. This is what the Mexican equivalent of Chuckle Nuts said at the press conference. One more when we come back, and then we'll take some phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
You're gonna spread your wings. Take the sky, but until that morning, they're gonna work you for peanuts. Hush, little baby, don't
hard to put food on your family.
I take a long walk to a company town. On what used to be.
Don't forget, next hour, a moment with Bob. It's about 10 before the hour. Last one from the presser with the three deluded amigos. This reporter asks El Presidente de Moron about the U.S. recession. The reporter says, this question for President Bush, how deep and how long will the economic recession be in the United States, and how will it affect Mexico?
First of all, we're not in a recession. We're in a slowdown. we grew in the fourth quarter last year. We haven't had first quarter growth statistics yet, but there's no question we're in a slowdown. And people are concerned about it, obviously. I'm of all the three of us standing up here, I'm probably the most concerned about the slowdown.
How are things on Fantasy Island, George? By the way, say hi to Tattoo for me, will you? In a way, I guess if you really stretch language a bit, he could probably be correct. Like, if you have two trains hurtling at each other at 75 miles an hour and they have a head-on collision, the resulting lack of forward motion on the part of either one could be considered a slowdown. Right? We're not in a recession. We're in a slowdown. Okay. But it's all going to end here. Did you get your $600 check yet? It'll all come to a screeching halt when we get our checks. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Oh, by the way, one of Nixon's daughters, Julie Nixon Eisenhower, apparently is supporting Barack Obama in this year's election. She has contributed the maximum amount allowed during the primary season to Barack Obama's campaign, $2,300. FEC records show she gave Obama's campaign $1,000 on February 4th, another $1,000 on February 18th, and $300 on March 5th. And, of course, as you know, Julie Nixon Eisenhower is married to David Eisenhower, Dwight Eisenhower's grandson. What? You don't know what's happening? Well, since her father's resignation, Julie Nixon Eisenhower has written several books and is now co-chair of the Richard Nixon Presidential Library and Birthplace Foundation. It's got to be rough. But thank goodness she loves her dad. We are subsidizing global terrorism. Every time, you know, I thought about this today when I filled up my pickup truck. And here in Atlanta, gasoline, let's see, what did I pay today? $3.49 a gallon for regular. And I stood there filling out my thing. You know, I am subsidizing global terrorism. Why? According to the Los Angeles Times, article written by Josh Meyer, Saudi Arabia, and this is not a new article, this is from a couple of weeks ago, Saudi Arabia remains the world's leading source of money for Al-Qaeda. Huh? And other extremist networks, and has failed to take key steps requested by U.S. officials to stop the flow of money. That's according to the Bush crime family's top financial counterterrorism official, Stuart Levy. A Treasury undersecretary told a Senate committee a couple of weeks ago that the Saudi government had not taken the steps necessary to go after those who finance terrorist organizations, and the Saudi government had taken no steps to prevent wealthy donors from bankrolling extremism through so-called charitable contributions. Levy said to the committee, quote, Saudi Arabia today remains the location where more money is going to terrorism, to Sunni terror groups, and to the Taliban than any other place in the world, end quote. Of course, Saudi Arabia has been identified on several occasions as a major source of funding for extremism. And when I'm pumping gas into my pickup truck today, you know, I thought about this because I had read this before I left the house. And I thought about this and I thought, you know, in that moment, I couldn't help but get the image of George Bush and members of the Saudi royal family kissing and holding hands every time they get together at Prairie Chapel down in Texas or in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And I also thought about how the Bush crime family, the Bush nuclear crime family, just the blood family of George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, the Walkers and the Bushes have for a long time been financed by international gangsters. And the Bush family, George W. and his siblings, they're business partners. They do business together. Does this bother anybody? Is Nancy Pelosi not aware of this? Is this violating the law? Is there something wrong here? Does this stink? Is this son of a bitch George Bush in bed with the people who are funding the organizations that murder Americans? And I know you can make the argument that we should get our ass out of the Middle East and then we wouldn't get murdered. Okay, fair enough. But the fact is, Bush put us there. Other presidents have put us there. And Saudi Arabia, the Bush family's major business partners, the Saudi royal family, remain the world's leading source of money for extremist organizations. I don't know, man. Somehow that just doesn't quite make my night calm. I don't know. There's something there. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Regarding my comment about being told not to use the term some, or the word some, or the term a lot, it's improper improper use of English when trying to explain something. Bob writes, "Hey, Mike, I use a lot, a lot. I like it. Exactly what I want to say. Like when Bush speaks, it makes me throw up a lot." we have a moment with Bob here. Then to your phone calls. "Hey, Mike, Orson Welles made a documentary whose title is befitting. The Country We Live In. F for Fake." That was the name of the film. "Because we're in a whole new country now. We've been going in this direction for some time, and we're finally here. Welcome to America 2.0. This is a country where all we have to do is go through the motions, and that's good enough. For most of us, we have two similar national pastimes, trying to make money or trying to make enough money. For the select few at the top, their amusement is screwing us out of our money. Here in America 2.0, our capacity for pain and abject horror is at an all-time high. We seem to be able to take anything and dish it out, too. Why, we can be lied into a war. Just flat-out fed a load of easily disproved crap, invade a couple of countries, get thousands of our guys killed, over a million of theirs, get stuck there for God knows how long, and the Democrats, you know, the opposition party, they're trying to figure out how they can continue to get us to pay for it all. And while the rest of the civilized world watches in stupefied amazement, we can rip up any old goddamn piece of paper and torture the bejesus out of anybody we want to. Torture techniques were demonstrated to and approved by the top guys in the Bush administration, and the president admits he knew about them too. And yesterday, he made a cameo appearance on a game show. He's not going to be impeached or tried for war crimes. He gets to be on Deal or No Deal. Is this a great country or what? Back here in the homeland, over the next several years, 2 million American families will lose their homes, roughly 20,000 every week. And that's okay for most of us, especially for the financial institutions that get bailed out with our cash for being unimaginably greedy. Heck, we even still have to, we get to have elections here in America 2.0. Now, even though Jonathan Alter, writing in Newsweek back in March, figured out that if Hillary Clinton won every single primary left to go, she'd still be 58 delegates behind Barack Obama. In a rational pre-America 2.0 world, that would mean the superdelegates would vote the will of the people, and Obama would be the Democratic contender against John McCain. But hold on to your hats, because this is America 2.0, where anything can happen. You see, you can't have a horse race unless you got at least two horses. And we've got a mainstream media here that doesn't want anything unless it's a good show. The first part of the show is a long, dragged-out primary season with a couple of Democrats bashing each other over the heads with big bladders and embarrassing and boring everybody. The second part of the show is a weakened Democrat going head-to-head with a Republican crazy man. I'm betting the Republican crazy man will win because the conservative media, the only media we've got here in America 2.0, has forgiven every stupid gaffe the Republican crazy man has ever made. But one of the weakened Democrats has committed the unpardonable sin of not wearing a China-made American flag lapel pin. Now that's news. Now, way back in the 60s, that would be America 1.5, I guess, prominent Americans would speak out against the direction the country was going, and masses of people would take to the streets in protest. Robert F. Kennedy was running for the presidency, and according to Martin Luther King's son, Dexter, quote, RFK was considering Dr. King as a vice presidential candidate, end quote. Both King and Kennedy were against the Vietnam War, and King wanted to, quote, force major economic reforms, starting with guaranteed annual incomes for all, end quote. In 1968, by summer's end, both King and Kennedy had been assassinated. That's how things were done in America 1.5. The Vietnam War raged on, and economic reforms wouldn't be put in place until Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980. But, of course, those reforms were only for the rich. Still are. But I digress. All I'm really trying to say is Americans used to fight for what they believed in. 8-hour workdays, decent pay, a couple of weeks vacation, the ability to raise a family and take care of ourselves if we got sick. Americans fought for what they deserved. The American dream was that our kids would have a better life than we did. Now the American dream 2.0 is to have the inalienable right to buy crap. We have the country we deserve, the fake one. We didn't fight for anything. So we got an unreasonable facsimile instead. America 2.0. Anybody want to reboot? Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your good friends at superbeans.com. Where coffee is really coffee. I just added the paid commercial announcement there. All right, phone calls, phone calls, phone calls. It is 13 past the hour. Let's go to Arnold, who's calling from North Carolina, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
I hope it's not a rainy night in Georgia, man, because you are so busted, man.
No, it is a great night in Georgia. What am I busted on? What happened?
The cat just said, you know, she went in the restroom.
I know, no, and now you see, you have to stir it up again. See, that was 45. That was 45 minutes ago, and she already forgot it. Go ahead, say it again. Go ahead, Arnold.
Some Crescent restaurant you was in. I don't know. Listen, You know, you cut away from Hillary's speech, man, and she was getting ready to go in the part where she was up being outspent 3-1, and that from day one that you don't have to worry about that black man's finger being on the button. That boy's finger being on the button. I got control of that button because I'm a nuke Iran. I ain't gonna be like George Bush or Dick Cheney. I'm gonna go ahead and nuke him.
I'm gonna do it.
That boy, his finger don't fit that button like my finger do.
That's right. If they get froggy, I will jump.
That's right. I tell you, man. And she, you know, she said Obama spent her 3-1. Yeah, I guess so. You know, he's buying all his TV commercials, and she's spending her money on pizza and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, she did complain about being outspent, but you know that statement. When I saw that this morning about Hillary Clinton saying Iran will be obliterated, you know that just makes for a rotten day. It was a beautiful day here in Georgia. It was gorgeous. It was like 72 degrees, 29% humidity. The pollen's almost gone. I mean, it was the kind of day it makes you want to get out of your skin and run around in your bones. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And I have to read that. And I don't know how that affects other people. I don't know how it affects Hillary Clinton. She has a child. Granted, the child is grown now and is an adult woman. But to say, as though she was saying, you know, I'll have onions on that, to say, I will make sure that Iran is obliterated with nuclear weapons, I realize I'm paraphrasing, if they attack Israel, it's just a good way to piss up an entire day. You know what I'm saying?
I'm telling you. It's just, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, here, she's supposed to be the heir apparent for the Democrats, and they make a statement like that. I'm sick of her.
Hey, listen. Hey, Arnold, I got to go.
All right, man.
All right, take it easy. Okay.
We'll talk to you later on, Mike.
All right, drive safely. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. How you feeling? You doing okay? True Seeger? Huh? I feel a little creeped out tonight. A little more so than usual, I guess. I don't know. Just a little creeped out. Let's go back to your phone calls. Mal, is it Mal, calling from Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio? Is this Mal?
Mal.
Hey, Mal. Welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Back when NAFTA first came in, I about flipped the gourd, and I told everybody NAFTA, the initials NAFTA, should be not a fair trade America, which has came true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the state of Michigan. I had my own company when that went through, and I had too many businesses. I was in the HVAC business, you know, refrigeration and stuff, and it has just ruined it. So many of my companies I did work for, mom and pop shops, have closed up and everything. I had to close my company down.
Yeah.
And I went to work for another company, and they're about ready to close down now. And you talk about gas prices that you paid. It was $3.69, $3.71 here in Michigan.
Wow.
And it's just tough. It's really, really tough here. Our unemployment rate is 7.1 right now. It's higher than the national average. And everybody seems to forget about that little mitten up there that has produced, you know, quality vehicles and, you know, helped the labor and everything, you know, the unions and stuff, where the non-union could actually get a decent wage and get vacations and get health care and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they forget about us up here. And you're right. I am kind of worried about it. People should be just smoking mad. I mean, they should be putting their fist down right now and their foot right up somebody's rear end and getting things moving here, you know, so that we in the U.S. stand up for what we are, you know.
Do you think any one of the three possible candidates here who might wind up as president, McCain, Clinton, or Obama, can do anything about this, Mal?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, how far do they have their mittens in the money? You know, what connections do they have? Where are they at there? Who are they going to bow down to? And one other thing that my grandfather told me years ago, you flip a quarter, it's heads or tails. It don't matter, it's still a quarter. And it's the same thing with the president, people running, they're still a politician, no matter how it goes. And,
but wasn't there a time in your life, because I know there was in mine, where I still had faith in the not just the political system, but in politicians? Now,
yes, especially
Democrats.
You know, my favorite president was Kennedy. You know, because he stood up for, you know, he may have had some scams going on, but you actually believed what he said. He was for the people, and he stood up, and he stood behind it. You know, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis. He was right there, you know, not going to put up with anything from any other country. Instead, now we got everybody trying to knock us down and to even play in form with the third world countries. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that. We were number one, and we should still be number one. You know, and as the politicians are today, half the time I don't. If their heads were made out of gunpowder, I don't think they'd have enough to blow their heads off their shoulder.
Well, and, I, you know, I'm originally from Toledo, Ohio, Mal, and I remember back in the day when places like Toledo and Bowling Green and in Michigan, if it was Monroe or Flint or, you know, all these different towns that were feeder cities for Detroit, actually, you know, when it was possible, I'm not talking about what was going on, you know, socially, but I'm talking about jobs. And there were plenty of jobs. There was decent income. And you just had the feeling that, you know, life was good. I can remember thinking that when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. What 10, 11, 12-year-old stops and thinks life is good? I think I remember thinking that. Maybe not. Maybe it's just something I would have liked to have thought when I was 12. But it seems to me that when I grew up, and we were poor. We were just working class, lower working class, blue collar, low the low end of the spectrum. But everything seemed okay because even though there was the threat of nuclear war with the Ruskies and this and that and this and that, the world was smaller back then. It was smaller in terms of population, but it was also smaller in terms of expectations or in terms of threats or in terms of what could possibly happen. And it just, I don't know, man, something happened. Something happened in the 70s and the 80s and then wound up in the 90s with NAFTA that just ripped it to pieces. It's just gone.
Oh, yes, it is. It is. We don't have the camaraderie we had back then with your neighbors and the people that you were. Not so much now as what we did then, because, you know, I'll be 55 this year. And I, you know, I remember that so very well. But, you know, the thing is, what happened, it was the Reagan years that really started this stuff to roll.
It did. It did.
You know,
it did.
And and he had wrote that the Patriot Act back then, and they've been trying and trying and trying.
Well,
to get it.
They finally got it. Mal, I got to leave there. Thank you, pal. I appreciate you checking in, and just, you know, keep calling. Call when the spirit moves you. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Explore for natural gas in Alaska without damaging the economy, the environment.
Yeah. Back to your phone calls. Gilberto is calling from El Paso, Texas, listening on the internet. Gilberto, welcome to the program.
Yes, honored to be on your show, Mike. You're my favorite radio host by far.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to see if I could rant a little bit about something that's not getting any mainstream press. And that would be the fact that Mexico has a nationalized oil corporation. It's called Pemex.
Right.
And right now, the big oil monopolies are trying to get in, joint venture with them. And once they're in, I believe they're never going to get out. They're going to start privatizing it. And it's bad enough that Mexico has to, they don't allow the Mexico to have any refineries. I believe they don't even have one refinery. So they have to send out their oil to get refined somewhere else and pay all of the cost of refining and transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to the people over there. Those costs go to the people over there. Well, now Texaco, Shell, and Exxon want to joint venture with Mexico to drill into the Gulf of Mexico. Supposedly Mexico can't do it on their own. And what I say is that why don't they build their own refineries, and with the savings they can buy their own technology and not have to sell out to the likes of Texon, Exxon, and Shell. I think that you know, if people who are against immigration should focus on the cause for immigration, not the symptom. The symptom are the immigrants, but the cause for immigration is the imperialism that these global imperialist oil corporations impose on third world countries like Mexico. Mexico and Latin America are actually rich countries. Only the people are poor, and they're poor because of these imperialistic policies that are imposed on them. And you know, the media is completely sold out over there too. They're doing push polls that are just designed to. They're really not polling. What they're just trying to do is at the same time that they're polling the people, they're trying to convince them. It's like if I would say, who do you support, the evil Mike Malloy that's against America, or the hopeful Ronald Reagan? You know, it's really not a question.
Yeah. Push polls are notorious. Of course, they're being used here too. You know, the exploitation of Central and South America's natural resources by the U.S. That's been going on now for what, about 150 years, and it's resulted in an awful lot of fascism being imposed on the various countries in Latin America. It's resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. As far as Pemex is concerned, it's my understanding that one of the reasons refineries are not built there, if that's the case, I've always heard that there's no way to process this Mexican oil. I guess that's what they mean by refineries. But Pemex has been a huge slush fund, a huge money pot for all of these politicians, especially the ones in the ruling party, the PRI, that was, I believe it was PRI, wasn't it?
Right. And the plan is in there right now as well. And Calderon was put in by Bush through Choice Point, the same people.
Right, exactly.
That stole Florida.
Right. And Calderon, as far as a lot of observers are concerned, actually lost the election just like Bush did here. But that doesn't matter anymore. It's like what's going on right now in Zimbabwe. It doesn't make any difference if the ruler says I won, then by God he won. If a new ruler wants to win and has the right-wing connections, then it's just a matter of bringing in the proper voting machines, the proper election observers, and the election is his or hers. So
that's absolutely correct. You know, there's a movie about the imperialism that is actually causing all of this immigration. It's on Google Video, and you know, instead of pressing Google Images or Google Maps, you press Video, and it's a wonderful movie. It's called War on Democracy. It's by John Pilger.
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do is just type in War on Democracy, and you can see it. It's a wonderful movie. I think it even dwarfs Michael Moore's films that he's made.
I'll try to check it out. Gilberto, thank you. I appreciate you checking in.
Hey,
call in again. All right. Take care, pal. Jim is calling from Sydney, British Columbia, Canada. Hey, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, we're fine.
How's everything in the Great White North?
Well, it's not very white here. It's actually been sunny all day and with blue skies. We're just off of Vancouver Island.
Yeah, it's beautiful where
it's
you live.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful, yeah.
So we're Americans who spend part of our time here, and we really enjoy listening to you on the Internet.
Are you just there for a holiday, or have you moved there?
Well, we're what's called seasonal residents. We spend almost half a year here, and I work internationally, and I've just finished a job in England, and I'll be going to France next month.
Oh, my.
India for another job.
And then to India. It must be awful to have such a boring life, but the real reason you called tonight, Jim.
Well, number one, we're a little, I guess, disappointed with what's happening in with what has happened in Pennsylvania. We were hoping for a bigger turnout for Barack. But, you know, I'm a ex-military. I was in Vietnam, and I'm 63, and I got out. But I don't support the militaristic people, and I support Barack. But we, my wife and I, were sitting here tonight, and we were just listening, and we thought of a few names for our president and our vice president, and they're not nasty and they're not dirty.
Mm-hmm.
We just thought that maybe instead of Bush, it would be Bushler, and maybe instead of Cheney, or however he pronounces it, it would be Chenigula. As Caligula.
That's a stretch, Jim, but I'll accept it. I'll accept it. Listen, take care. I appreciate you checking in. Hope to hear from you again. Take care, Jim. Joe is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic, 92.1. Hey, Joe.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing good.
Huh?
I'm doing good.
Oh, good, good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, I was kind of figured that Hillary wouldn't made it.
Hillary, you know? What?
Hillary, I kind of figured that she made it in Pennsylvania. You know,
that she won.
Yeah,
she did.
Earlier, I was listening to Ed Schultz. He didn't think Hillary would. He was figuring that Barack Obama would win.
Uh-huh. Well, Ed Schultz, I don't think, is really in touch with the political system on the eastern part of the United States, especially not voting patterns in Pennsylvania. I think it was pretty – it was obvious to everybody, I think, even including Barack Obama. He said today that he knew – I'm paraphrasing – but he knew that the state was going to go for Hillary. And that she had to win by a substantial margin in order to make the win valid. But who was it? James Carville said one time that Pennsylvania is Philly in the southeast corner and Pittsburgh in the northwest and Alabama in between.
How do you think it's going to happen in Indiana?
Zoom. Indiana attitudes are similar, I think, political attitudes, for the most part, to those of Pennsylvania, although southern Indiana tends to be extremely racist. So it depends on, I think racism was a factor in today's Pennsylvania primary. I've lived in Pennsylvania before. I've lived in small town Pennsylvania. I lived in York, Pennsylvania. I can think of very few places outside the Deep South that, when I lived there, had more of a racist attitude where it concerned people of color. So, you know, Obama started out with an impossible, you talk about Rocky, the Rocky theme, with an impossible, idea, and a near impossible idea, and that is that white America would actually vote for a black man, would actually say, you know, this guy really is qualified regardless of his skin color. In other words, would not see him as a black American, but would see him as an extremely attractive and viable presidential candidate. And for the most part, for young voters, more educated voters, that turns out to be the case. But for older white Americans, they just can't get past it. It's going to take another generation or two, I think, for white America to realize what fools we can be where it concerns that color thing. And especially where it concerns Barack Obama. For the real racists out there, what they're doing is denying that he's got a white, she's dead now, but he had a white mother and a black father, which means, oh my goodness, he's I hate this term, but, you know, to the racist, he would be half white. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Hello? Which is impossible. I mean, there is no such thing. There is no such thing as half black, half white, black, white. None of this. It's all nonsense. It's garbage. It's ridiculous. It's asinine. And it's so typically, beautifully, just what you would expect in America. Before the hour, the program is almost fini. Really? Time just rips by when you're having fun, doesn't it? Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director, who managed somehow to solve the streaming problem we had earlier this evening. Ben Birch is our podcast manager. I think he had a hand in sorting things out also. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander is our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence. And if I haven't mentioned it lately, become a Nova M founding member, would you please? If you do, you get free downloads and podcasts when you want them. You also get all sorts of fine, wonderful things that are being offered by Nova M Radio as a result of your becoming a founding member. It's $10 a month or $100 a year, and it's money well spent. You know, if you have it, if you don't have it, the programs on this network are essentially free. If you have, you know, if you have a computer, if you listen on the radio, if you're listening via Sirius or Nova M, or if you listen to podcasts, yeah, there's a small fee. But and we need your support. We ask for your support, and we hope you'll give it to us. Go to NovaMRadio.com and get the information about becoming a founding member. Oh, yeah, the executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay, who is still a little, probably a little
bit. I'll go eat a beignet.
Probably a little bit chagrined about our imaginary trip to New Orleans. Well, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It really was. Red was really a nice person.
Okay.
You've never met Red, have you?
Oh, my God. Yes, I have met Red.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't want to get that story screwed up either. That's right. We went to see a film one night. And
you know, the rules of holes, right? You know, the
when
first rule.
When
yeah.
you're in one, stop digging.
Yeah, just enjoy your chicory coffee and your beignets and it at that.
We'll talk about this later, I'm sure. Oh, John Manzo, help me. All right, back to your phone call. Skip is calling.
He wasn't there either.
No, he wasn't. Skip is calling from Nevada, listening on Sirius. Hey, Skip.
Yeah, hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. Listen, I'd like to bring up a comment that I know we're not going to hear from the GOP this year, and that is, if you're better off than you were 4 years ago, vote Republican.
There you go. There you go.
And Mike, since you're a little down, I'd like to leave you with a little political joke here.
All right, is it clean?
Yes, it's clean.
Oh, I don't want to hear it then. No, I'm just kidding. All right.
Okay, what's the difference between George Bush, Bill Clinton, and Jane Fonda?
I give up. What is the difference between George Bush, Bill Clinton, and Jane Fonda?
At least Jane Fonda made it to a war zone. Thanks for everything you do, Mike.
All right, Skip. Thanks for checking in. I think I heard that in a coffee shop in New Orleans one time when I was eating beignet. Dan is calling from Spokane, Washington, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Dan.
Yes, how you doing there, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Fantastic. You know, Bill Clinton, he's the one that got Congress to go after.
Yeah, he did.
And he liked it so well, after it got to Mexico, he moved all over to China, and Mexico lost 200,000 jobs because of it. Now, America's only lost about 1 million jobs because of it, but he liked NAFTA so well, getting rid of manufacturing and getting rid of manufacturing jobs, that he also started the HB1 visa for professionals, foreign professionals, to come over to America and replace our professionals, because they'd work for $15,000 to $20,000 cheaper a year, and he just happened to replace 300,000 of them.
Well,
so
you know
why we don't have jobs. Well, look at Bill Clinton, and the people that want Hillary, they want the same stuff.
I know.
Working class.
No, I don't think she is. I really don't. I don't think. I think you have to go all the way back to Carter, maybe, to find somebody who is really interested in the working class. And don't send me emails about that. I know there's a differing opinion there, but just my opinion, maybe because he was from Georgia here, and I worked on the Peanut Brigade to help get him elected. But as far as the responsibility of George Herbert Hebert Bush and Bill Clinton. I think what they did was simply press the buttons that corporate America or unbridled capitalism were waiting to have pressed. Once you knock down any barriers to free trade, whether they are tariffs or environmental laws or union requirements or health and safety regulations or whatever it is, once you get rid of all those, then unbridled capitalism is like a horse gone berserk. It just takes off and it doesn't stop running. It runs through barbed wire. It runs through. It just keeps going until it finds until this capitalistic horse finds a place where labor costs are the very least. So Mexico is just an interim step. Mexico, Bush and Cheney, I'm sorry, Bush and Clinton had really nothing to do with the economic monster that's growing in China and the fact that you have hundreds of millions of people there who are willing to work for the kind of money that an American worker or a Canadian worker or a European worker might make in 20 minutes, and a Chinese worker will do that for the same amount of money in a week. And capitalism sees that, and it's the closest thing American capitalism has had to what we had here in the middle of the 19th century, slavery. Well, that's when it ended. But from the beginning of this country to the middle of the 19th century, slavery. Slavery is the perfect model for capitalism. Absolutely, the perfect model. Perfect. And the closest that corporate America has come to this has they've come to it as a result of NAFTA and GATT and the World Bank and all these so-called trade agreements that, well, you know what they do. Thanks for hanging out. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.